Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III talks sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning. Happy Labor Day to you out there. This is RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios this morning, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over-the-air 24-hour sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. We have a tremendous jam-packed show for you. What a tremendous weekend for college sports and the pros. We're going to get to LSU offensive fireworks in their season opener versus Georgia Southern. I'm pretty sure they're still scoring touchdowns as we speak right now. We're going to talk about New Orleans Saints making their cuts to get down to the 53-man roster. A few surprises. A couple of guys brought back to the practice squad. They also make a out-of-left-field trade yesterday for a starting linebacker in Kiko Alonso. We'll talk about that. We'll also talk about Justin Verlander. Did he cement his victory, his win, so to speak, of being rewarded this year's American League Cy Young Award with throwing his third career no-hitter yesterday? We'll talk about that and much, much more. We'll also have not one but two high school season previews for you. The Northwest Raiders and the Port Barry Devils are on deck for today's show. Plus, we got not one, not two, but three guests will join us to break down Raging Cajuns, LSU Tigers, and the New Orleans Saints. We'll have a new poll question up for you to vote on here in the next half hour as well. You're going to enjoy yourself. And we appreciate you taking time out of your holiday. It's Labor Day. Enjoy your day off, but we appreciate you making us part of your day. But let's start off with the Raging Cajuns. Big takeaway from Saturday's game inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome is you got to love the fight that you saw from this team, especially in the second half. You got to love the fact that they didn't give up. They didn't quit. You got to be impressed with the way the defense made adjustments after getting gashed on that first scoring drive by Mississippi State. They made adjustments. They forced turnovers themselves and made Mississippi State look human. Once again, this was a 40-plus point game last year in Starkville. The spread on Saturday's game was 19.5. Cajuns only lost by 10, 38-28 there to a team out of the SEC West. Now, we could talk all day about how it was not a great weekend for the SEC outside of Alabama, LSU, and Georgia because, well, Tennessee lost at home as a 20-point favorite to a two-win team from the Sun Belt last year, Georgia State, who was one of the worst teams in the country. Missouri lost to a team out of the Mountain West. South Carolina lost to a two-win North Carolina team. Not a great look for the SEC, salvaged by LSU being dominant, Bama being dominant, and Auburn winning in spectacular fashion against Oregon on a last-second touchdown. We can talk about that, and time will tell if Mississippi State is anywhere near the caliber of team that they were last year when they had all of that talent that was bound for the NFL. I personally don't think so. I don't think they'll be as good. Wouldn't be surprised if you see Mississippi State be a 6 or 7 win team this year. That said, you got to love what you saw out of the Raging Cajuns. You got to love what you saw, the adjustments made on the defense. They were better than they were last year. They made adjustments during the game. for one. Now, they had trouble slowing down the running game. They just couldn't do it, especially early on. I mean, Kyon Hill from Mississippi State had 27 carries for 197 yards. Okay? He had 100 yards before halftime. Cajuns could not slow down the running attack. That's a little bit of a concern, but they did a nice job against Tommy Stevens. 20 of 30, 236 yards, two touchdowns, but he was sacked twice. So they kind of kept him in check. There wasn't Nick Fitzgerald piling up 600 yards of offense. You know, six touchdowns, 400 yards of offense by himself as the team rolled up 600 yards of offense as they did last year against the Cajuns. So improvements made. Some areas of concern. I liked what I saw out of Levi Lewis in the second half. The first half, he struggled. First play of the game, first play of scrimmage for the offense, Levi Lewis throws an interception. The very next offensive drive for the Raging Cajuns, they're driving down the field, Levi Lewis, sack, fumble, turnover. First two drives, Levi Lewis turned over the ball. Can't have that happen. The young man's got to be able to take better care of the ball. He's got to make better decisions with it. He struggled with his accuracy. He was inconsistent with his passing. But they found a way to hang in the game. And then Levi was able to kind of turn it on. After such a poor start to the game, he actually finishes 24 of 39 for 267 yards, a touchdown. It's not a bad game for the young man. Has to get over those turnovers. Because here's the thing. They also got a little cute, too cute with the play calling early on. There was a fourth and one play that was set up early on that they could have just ran the ball because, by the way, Raymond Calais was unstoppable, eight carries for 80 yards, and then they cooled off because they went to some of the other running backs. But Regas was just as effective. Elijah Mitchell struggled a little bit. He averaged less than 3 yards a carry. But they get a little too cute where they decide, and we find out afterwards, they decide Levi does a quick throw to the wide receiver, and then the wide receiver is going to throw to Levi, apparently, and that resulted in a fumble. That's points off the board. Got a little too cute there with the offensive play calling, especially with a young quarterback who is only making his fourth start at the collegiate level. Got a little too cute. Mississippi State had problems stopping the run early. It's fourth and one. You have a veteran offensive line that is very good at run blocking. You have a three-headed monster in the backfield. Why are you being cute? So there were some questionable play calls, especially early on. And Levi Lewis struggled. The Cajuns had a chance. This is going to be a game where they're going to want that back because at the end of the day, they only lost by 10 points, but they also committed five turnovers. Five. Defense made adjustments, slow down Mississippi State. You're playing against a team from the SEC West. You have an opportunity on a neutral field inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. And what happens if you don't get cute with the play calling there on fourth and one? What happens if you don't commit two turnovers to start off the game? You may even have a chance to finally win that first game against a team from the SEC. Even though Billy Napier was frustrated by the fact that the team lost the game afterwards, he was proud of the effort and proud of what his team was able to do, especially there in the second half.
I want everybody to know how proud I am of our football team. I think we've got a group of young men in there that are made of the right stuff. Tremendous intangibles. You know, I thought they played with tremendous effort. There was a great level of belief out there that we could accomplish that and win that game. We were tough. We were physically tough. We were mentally tough.
And they were. They were physically tough and they were mentally tough. Because to overcome those issues that they had early on and to still be in the game and still push a team from the SEC who, look, may or may not be very good this year. Time will tell. It's a long season. Plenty to be proud of. Coach Napier was very proud of the fact that his team kept getting off the mat, so to speak. Anytime a bad thing happened, a turnover or a miscue, they were able to recover from it fairly quickly.
We kept getting up off the mat. Okay, there's no question about that. Now, we made mistakes, and certainly we made costly mistakes, but how did it affect us? It affected the scoreboard, affected the statistics, but I think from a mindset standpoint, a mental toughness standpoint, you know, we proved that we've made progress in those areas. So, and that's what probably I'm most proud of is that we didn't quit. We kept playing. We kept dealing with adversity the right way. You know, we got to coach better and we got to play a little better.
Got to coach better, got to play a little bit better. Coach Napier also talked about his starting quarterback, how those early miscues a little bit, he looked a little bit anxious to start the game, and Coach Napier admitted that afterwards, despite the fact that his quarterback was able to have a career night with completions and passing yardage.
I thought he was a little anxious early, you know, and rightfully so, you know. The guy has tremendous passion. You can see once that he's settled in. I mean, think about the guy, the things that he went through in that game, his first start, certainly an opportunity to play in a terrific venue to kind of come out of the woodworks and, you know, throw it to the other team on the first play. But the guy's, you know, the guy's prepared. Sometimes we overestimate the event. We underestimate the process, right? Sure, today was a game and, you know, there were things that happened within the game, but I'm going to tell you something. We've been working hard at our process for a long time, and we're equipped to handle that, and certainly we did handle that today.
Levi Lewis did look a little anxious. Throws were off. His timing was off. But once he kind of settled down, heading into halftime, and especially there in the second half, he did look good. He did look like he could, had a very good grasp of how to execute and run Billy Napier's offense. But those turnovers were killer. Now, he ended up having another interception there at the end of the game when they were trying to put some more points on the board. He just threw one up. Can't really, you know, put that on him, so to speak. The first interception, though, was awful. I mean, he just threw it to the wrong side of the field. But he did look anxious, but he did settle down. So it'll be interesting to see. Once again, can't necessarily measure yourself to an SEC West team when you play in the Sun Belt. It's a little unfair because things are going to be skewed. Now, I would also go on the same limb and say that a team like Liberty that comes to Cajun Field this coming Saturday, 6:30 kick, home opener for the Raging Cajuns, I don't think that's a good litmus test either. I think you have to wait till you get, when you're a team from the Sun Belt, you can't really judge what you're going to be until you get about three or four games in, until really you start playing conference play, because you learn a lot about your team until then, through that process, so to speak. Coach Napier talked about lots of room for improvement, though, and it just wasn't just one area in particular.
The area where we got to improve is discipline. You know, I felt like we were a little sloppy at times. Procedurally, didn't handle some of the situations in the game well. And certainly when you turn the football over and you have undisciplined penalties, those are things that you can control, whether it's the player or the coach. And I take total responsibility for that. Myself and our staff, we're going to get that right. You know, and that's not the type of football team that we want to be.
I tell you, though, they have plenty to work on, because this is still year two. And it's still, even though most of these players understand now what Billy Napier and his staff, including Coach Rob Sale and Coach Ron Roberts, your offense and defensive coordinators, what they want, how they want to execute, they understand the playbook, they understand the different, you know, layers of the coaching, it still takes time, right? And it still takes time. But I tell you, as good of a second half as Levi Lewis had, and others had a great game, offensively, the star of the game has to be Jamal Bell. This is a guy who barely got any playing time last year for the Raging Cajuns, was kind of in the doghouse, so to speak, And he steps up because of an injury. Wide receiving core got a little banged up. He was forced to get out there, and he only had a career night. 8 receptions for 113 yards for the Raging Cajun wide receiver. He kind of stole the show, so to speak. And he talked about his performance there Saturday inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome.
I feel like I had a good game, but at the end of the day, it doesn't depend on how my performance was if we don't win the game. So we can clean up a lot of mistakes that we made at the beginning of the game, and we could have probably came out with the W.
So, asked about his own individual performance, career night, receptions, yardage. I think Jamal only had like 3 catches last year, his first year with the Raging Cajuns. He was a JUCO guy that came in last year, made no impact whatsoever last year, and has a huge game, steps up for his team, and the only thing he's talking about is the sloppiness of the team and how they have things that they need to work on and how they have things that they need to improve on. So, a good start, though, for the Raging Cajuns. Yes, it's a loss, but to go toe-to-toe with a team that whooped you by more than 40 points a year ago, and to be able to only lose by 10, and you had a scoring drive right there at the end where you could have put up even more points. Oh, and you committed 5 turnovers? Could be a good sign of the Raging Cajuns being a very good team in 2019. We're going to take our first time out of today on this special Labor Day edition of RP3 and Company. When we come back, though, we'll talk more Raging Cajuns. We'll focus on the defense. They looked a lot better yesterday than they had how they ended last season and how they looked last year against Mississippi State. We'll talk about it right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
It's a completely different defense. We have a different mindset, a different focus. Everybody knows their role. Everybody knows what to expect from Coach Roberts as well. He knows what to expect from us. You know, we everything that we did today, that's something that we could have been doing, but we wasn't technique sound last year. You know, this year we just worked on the fundamentals and brought everything together.
That's Michael Jacquet, the third senior cornerback for the Raging Cajuns, talking about how this is an entirely different defense from a season ago. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Raging Cajuns fall short in the season opener, 38-28 against Mississippi State, the Bulldogs of the SEC. They're inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome on Saturday. A lot of self-committed errors, especially on the offensive side of the ball. 5 turnovers, tough to overcome. Defense looked better. Now, they're not quite where they want to be. I can guarantee you that Ron Roberts is not happy with the fact that his defense gave up 261 yards on the ground. He's not happy about that. And the guys on that team aren't happy about that either. They got gashed in the run game. It's something they've been trying to work on. And Jacques Boudreau, senior linebacker, talked about just how difficult, challenging that Mississippi State run game was on Saturday.
Every time, they ran the ball, they have a good back, they have a good offensive line. And, you know, going up against a big SEC team like that, that's what they're built for. That's their caliber. That's exactly what their bread and butter is, running the football. And they did that. But, you know, there was a couple plays that we could have took away. And, you know, some guys, you know, we were out of gaps. And, you know, just those little things we got to, you know, really got to clean it up. And it all, to me, I think it all comes down to communication. The more we talk out there and the more vocal we are, the easier it is for everybody to understand what's going on. If we're all wrong, we're all right. You know, and that's the mentality going forward.
So they admitted that the run game was, they struggled. And look, they gave up 261 yards on the ground. 3 touchdowns, okay? It's tough to get past that. But despite that, and despite their offense giving up 5 turnovers, they did pretty good. They're far better than they were last year. Look, Tommy Stevens only threw for 236 yards. Okay? That's a huge deal. He only rushed for 37 yards. They got gashed for more than 400 yards of offense from Nick Fitzgerald alone in last year's game when Mississippi State rolled up 600 yards of offense in that 40-plus point victory. So it's a step in the right direction. They look better than they did in the bowl game when they got trucked by Tulane. Okay? But this defense is still going to be a work in progress. Absolutely still going to be a work in progress. Michael Jacquet said so afterwards about cleaning up those mistakes that they're going to have to if they want to get better.
We're a totally different team. That's all that means. We're a force to be reckoned with, and we made a lot of mistakes out there. We're going to clean up the minor things that we messed up on, and we're going to put it all together.
They're going to put that all together. Jacques Boudreau said afterwards, you know, we started the season in NOLA. We're going to finish it in NOLA. And we'll see.
I mean, obviously, we built off a long way of where we came last year. And I think the sky's the limit for this program and this team, the senior class. We just have to keep practicing hard every single day. And who knows? Hopefully, I'll be talking to y'all again next time we're in the Dome for the New Orleans Bowl. That's the goal. That's what everybody's goal is, to come back here. We'll start the season here. We're going to finish it here.
I love the optimism. I love the fact that right afterwards they understand that they have work to do on the defensive side of the ball, but it is a step in the right direction. We'll see if they can build off that momentum as the season progresses and get even better on the defensive side of the ball. We got to take a timeout. When we come back here, we're going to head over to Baton Rouge. LSU had themselves a hell of a game. We'll talk about it right here on the Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
What a great job by our coaching staff. A great job, football team, in preparation. What we saw tonight is what we've been looking at practice for the last so many days. The guys have worked very hard. Very pleased with our offense. 72 plays, 39 passes, 39 rushes, 33 rushes, 472 total yards. How about this? 7-7 in the red zone. One of the goals we wanted to have this week, we wanted to beat them in the turnover ratio. We were plus two. Our defense held them to 98 yards. This is a good offense, and it's a well-coached football team. Cade York had two good field goals and a good punt return by Derek Stingley. So overall, a good team win.
It's a good team win. That'd be a way of saying that when you win your season opener 55-3 against a team that won 10 games a season ago. That's exactly what LSU did on Saturday night inside Tiger Stadium. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over the air, 24-hour sports coverage. And you can find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Great team win, says Coach O. That is an understatement. Everyone got into on the action. Joe Burrow had a career night, 5 touchdowns. He was sensational. We've been hearing for years about LSU wanting to spread the ball out. New wide-open offense. And Steve Ensminger has promised that this is what it's going to become. And they bring in Joe Brady from the New Orleans Saints, a young offensive-minded coach to come in to be the passing game coordinator. It's going to be more spread, and we hadn't seen it, and we were waiting to see it. And, boy, did we see it on Saturday. Absolutely a phenomenal performance from start to finish for the Tigers. Burrow tied a school record with 5 touchdown passes. LSU scored on its first 5 possessions of the game in a 55-3 absolute beatdown of Georgia Southern. It tied the second most points ever in a season opener in the SEC era, which began in 1933. Second most points in a season opener for LSU in the SEC era, which began, once again, in 1933. 473 yards of offense while holding Georgia Southern to only 98. We know what's up next. LSU travels to Austin to take on Texas. That'll be 6:30 kick on Saturday. You can listen to that live right here on 103.7 The Game. Burrow was phenomenal. 23 of 27, 278 yards and 5 touchdowns. That tied Zach Mettenberger's school record set back in 2013 with passing touchdowns in a game. All 5 of Burrow's passes, scoring passes, came in the first half. 14 different Tigers, 14, caught passes in the contest. Justin Jefferson led the way with 78 yards on 5 catches. Sophomore Terrence Marshall Jr. scored 3 touchdowns on 4 receptions, scoring touchdowns of 8, 3, and 11 yards. They were also balanced. It just wasn't the air attack for the Tigers. It was also on the ground as well. They ran the ball 33 times for 122 yards. Clyde Edwards-Helaire had a team high of 45 yards on 9 carries, including a 1-yard touchdown. Coach O talked about spreading the wealth on offense.
Spread the ball around the athletes, give them the ball in space, and let them make plays. And that's what they did. You know, again, Joe can see the field. Joe can go through his route progression. Now, opponents are going to be a little bit tougher coming up, but the pass rushers are going to beat. The ball's going to have to come out quicker, and I know that.
Coach O also talked about a big key in this game with Joe Burrow being able to have a record-setting night was the pass protection was a lot better.
Pass protection, no sacks tonight. I remember when we struggled against Southeast Louisiana last year, and so they were a lot better tonight.
Pass protection was a lot better tonight. But Coach O also gave credit to his leader of the offense, his quarterback, Joe Burrow, and just raved about his performance out there inside Tiger Stadium on Saturday night.
You know, Joe is a tremendous leader for us. We were coming in from a pregame warm-up, and he was hitting his helmet against the wall. He just love him. You know, it's game day, man. He's on, and he's a good quarterback. Thank God that we have him. He's a good leader. So I'm just happy for him.
Hitting his head against the wall. You heard Coach O. He laughed. That was a good old Coach O chuckle there. That made him happy. This is also the same man who chugs Red Bulls and crushes them on his head in his chest. His head had a history of doing that. So if he sees his quarterback banging his head against the wall to get pumped up, that's kind of going to be in Coach O's wheelhouse, right? That's kind of, you heard the chuckle. Yeah. It was happy that someone was inflicting pain on their own cranium before a game. Obviously, it didn't affect Joe Burrow because he went out there and tore it up against poor Georgia Southern, who had no answer for anything on Saturday night. Coach O also talked about his defense. Once again, held Georgia Southern to a total of 98 yards and a mere 3 points. They got a couple of takeaways early on. That was key. Coach O talked about that. Talked about the two takeaways early in the game that helped set the tone for the defense.
It was tremendous, especially that sack fumble by Rashard Lawrence. I'm glad to see it. You know, we had penetration by our defensive line. I thought our defensive line played good tonight. We played a lot of guys, but that made the difference. It turned the momentum in the ball game.
It did kind of turn the momentum. It kind of set the tone because the defense shut down Georgia Southern, got the takeaways. Boom, just like that, they had nothing. I mean, Georgia Southern managed only 8 first downs and was 1 of 12 on third down against the Tigers' defense. They only managed 74 yards with that vaunted triple option, only 74 yards on 39 rushing attempts, and they only completed 4 of 11 passes. Coach O also talked about one of the guys on the defensive side of the ball, Damone Clark, and why he started him.
Watch out for Damone Clark. And he was, you know, I look at the linebacker grades on a daily basis, and I see some 67%, and I see 100 about Damone Clark every day. And he came to work. He showed Dave that he can play tonight. Like I said, I think he's going to be a tremendous LSU linebacker.
So Damone Clark got the start. He was very effective. Another guy that was good on that side of the ball, dominant fashion, played a good game was Derek Stingley Jr., but he also returned some punts and kind of made people had a little bit of a buzz about him inside Tiger Stadium on one of the punts We got a significant amount of yardage. Coach O talked about his young freshman phenom.
Well, field position, the ability to strike. You know, we had Reggie Bush at USC, and he made a difference for us. You know, I'm not saying he's Reggie Bush, but once this guy gets it down, I think he's going to be very dangerous.
He's not saying he's Reggie Bush, but he made sure to go to that first comparison to the former Heisman Memorial Trophy winner, record-setting running back for national championship era USC. He's not saying he's Reggie Bush. He just makes the first comparison to Reggie. Stingley is a game changer, though. And once he gets some open field, he's going to be a dangerous return man. Could have someone the likes of Patrick Peterson or the Honey Badger Tyron Matthew there at LSU finally on the a defensive back with return skills that Derek Stingley Jr. has. Look, it was also a game where young players got playing time. The game got out of hand. Miles Brennan was able to play in the second half. We'll get to that. But Coach O talked about, you know, the young players getting to play, getting some significant playing time in an actual game.
It was great for morale. It was great to know that if they work hard, they're going to play. And most of the guys got a chance to play tonight. Darrell Rosenthal played a lot, and I thought he did good. Bedar played for the first time and started, and I think he did a good job. So those guys are going to be confident they can go in the game and play.
That's what you need to do. When you roll someone and you dominate them the way LSU dominated Georgia Southern, it's important to get your backups some game reps. Even though it may be against an inferior opponent and the game is well in hand, that's the time for them to adjust to the noise inside Tiger Stadium and playing underneath the lights and getting those game reps. Because as much as those coaches can practice with these kids and as much as they can run through drills and play scrimmages and everything else, nothing beats the actual in-game experience. That's how your players grow. That's how they truly develop and take that next step. And if you want to help the depth of your team, if you have a game that's already in the bag, you get your backups as much playing time as possible because that's what helps them more than anything in their development. A couple of guys, they got some playing time, were some of the backup running backs. Now, look, they had seven different players run the ball. Two of them were quarterbacks, but we talked about it earlier. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, he led the way, only 9 carries for 45 yards. Chris Curry had a couple of carries as well. Leonard Fournette had a couple carries, even scored a touchdown. That's Leonard's little brother. But Coach O talked about his two vaunted recruits, two true freshmen, John Emery and Ty Davis. And those two guys, John Emery, 6 carries for 20 yards, not a bad start to his career. Ty Davis had 5 carries for 11 yards. So they didn't get a ton of playing time. They didn't get a ton of reps, but they did get some. Coach O talked about his two young running backs.
Yeah, I thought that was a hell of a cut he made on a swing pass. And, you know, those guys have been showing us some tremendous things in practice, both John and Tyrone. I thought Chris Curry came in and ran the ball very well, too. So we have 5 capable backs. Leonard Fournette did a good job. We have 5 capable backs, and we're going to play them all.
You going to play them all? Miles Brennan also got some love. They've been talking a lot about him during fall camp. He's bigger and stronger. He's put on some actual muscle mass. He was always kind of rail thin. He came in mop-up duty. Obviously, they weren't going to be passing the ball as much. It was going to be kind of eating the clock and not wanting to embarrass Georgia Southern even further. But Miles Brennan was 7-12, 72 yards. Didn't take a sack. Didn't throw a touchdown, but also didn't throw an interception. Not a bad little performance. 3 carries for 2 yards, rather. This is what Coach O had to say about his backup quarterback.
I'm very proud of Miles. Miles has matured. He's gained weight. He's more comfortable in the pocket. I thought he made some tremendous throws. You can see his arm and his release is quick, very smart. He missed a couple of throws. But I think the more he gets in there, the better off he's going to be. We plan to play him as much as we can in significant plays this year.
See, and that shows you everything that they're going to try to play. They want Miles Brennan to get as many reps as possible to get him ready for next year so he can lead this offense next year and it can be a smooth transition. Caleb on Chason. That's right. I had a little flair there for you. Pass rushing specialist for LSU. Remember, last year he gets injured, hurts his knee in the opener against Miami there in Jerry World at AT&T Stadium, out for the year. And they never had that great pass rushing specialist for the whole year. He had that Arden Key role, and they were never able to kind of overcome that, so to speak. Now, Chase Allen did have a forced fumble. He didn't have a sack on Saturday. The Tigers only got two sacks, but they got five tackles for a loss, and more importantly, they just absolutely shut down the rushing attack, which made Georgia Southern one-dimensional and dominated the game from there. And he talked about the senior leader, talked about the importance of winning the turnover battle on Saturday.
I think we've been pressing it a lot, you know what I'm saying, the turnover margin. I mean, zero turnovers to offense, you have a 77% chance of winning. So the more turnovers we produce, you know what I'm saying, the higher chance of winning the game. And that's one of the things we focus on so much, getting the ball out.
That's Chase Allen talking about winning the turnover battle, how important it was to do so. And this is what he had to say, though, about Damone Clark. We heard what Coach O had to say about the young man, and this is what one of his teammates out there had to say about Damone Clark, who was second on the team with nine tackles on Saturday.
He looked good, but that's just a true testament to show that, I mean, man down, man up. I mean, anybody, as a person on this team, I have full faith in anybody on this team. So, I mean, I feel like I told you, I got any out of the position battles going on, just anybody, I trust in all the guys who always had the opportunity to play. And that just shows that he deserved the way he got tonight, and he maybe took it full advantage of.
He took full advantage of the surprise start, Chase Allen says, and Damone Clark was extremely, extremely effective. This is what the young man had to say himself, and he talked about the importance of stopping Georgia Southern's offense, especially stopping them on third down in particular.
It's really important because, you know, our coaches stressed it, you know, like third on the money down, like you said. They ran the ball for the most part, but when they didn't throw the ball, you know, we executed. But, you know, there are a few things we got to work on. We're going to work on it and get ready for Texas.
They held Georgia Southern to 1 of 12 on third down. 1 of 12. 1 of 12. It's kind of ridiculous how dominant they were on just both sides of the ball. They were absolutely ridiculous. But Coach O talked about it, though, that despite as great as it was out there, they still have plenty to work on. They still have things they need to work on. And you heard Damone Clark say it right there as well, that, yeah, they were great on defense and they forced turnovers and they did this and this, but they still have things that they can work on, they can clean up on, and get better at. Coach O brought that message home as well.
You know, there's going to be some things. There was some penetration in the backfield. We're going to have to run the ball better. Let's see if we can protect the passer against some of our opponents we play. So we know we can throw the ball. We know we can get guys open. Can we protect the passer on a consistent basis? I think that's going to be a big key for us.
Big key for them, if they can keep them. Keep up the pass protection, get better. That's what you want to hear your coach say. You love hearing it more so from the players. The players coming out and saying, we still got things to clean up on. They just won a game, once again, by the score of 55-3. And they're talking about the things that they let get away from them. They're talking about the things they need to get better at doing. So, overall, a dominant performance by the LSU Tigers. Offense, defense, special teams, and everything in between. 55-3 win. They will now travel to go to Austin to take on the Longhorns of UT. That'll be Saturday, pregame 4:30 right here on 103.7 The Game. Kickoff 6:30. You can listen to it live right here on the Acadiana Sports Station. We got to take a timeout here on this Labor Day edition of RP3 and Company. But when we return, we hope you stay with us. We got a little bit more LSU football talk to close out the hour. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
You know, every year we say we're going to throw the ball. You know, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. You know, people didn't really, you know, believe what we've been saying. Just coming out here and making these good plays and scoring as many points as we did, we just showed our people that this is what we really come out with.
That was LSU wide receiver Justin Jefferson. Talking about this new offense, how they're able to kind of spread the ball around. And you saw it there over the weekend inside Tiger Stadium. Welcome back to RP3 and Company, by the way, right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. LSU spread the ball around. Joe Burrow, record-tying night. 5 touchdown passes. Ties Zach Mettenberger. You heard Justin Jefferson talk about spreading it around, and that's what they were able to do on Saturday. Is this what we're going to see all season? That's the big question mark, right? Is this what we're going to see all season? Now, we're not going to see them put up 55 points every week, but they are spreading the ball out, hitting multiple wide receivers, using multiple running backs. Could be a powerful, dominant offense for LSU in 2019. We got to take a quick timeout. When we come back, we're going to put college football talk on hold briefly. Justin Verlander, third career no-hitter. We're going to discuss it right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III talks sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidifying everybody seeing that LSU for real.
Ragin' Cajun hoop star Elfrid Payton.
It's exciting to be able to represent, you know, your city, you know, somewhere where you grew up at and put that jersey on. See that it says New Orleans on the front of it. I think it means a lot.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning. Happy Labor Day to you out there. This is RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III, and you are listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. You can also find us on the simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over-the-air 24-hour sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. We began today's show talking all about college football. That's right. UL Ragin' Cajuns hanging tough versus Mississippi State. Only lost 38-28 in their home opener there in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Had a lot of potential, showed a lot of improvements from last season, but also 5 turnovers. Levi Lewis was responsible for 3 of them. Okay. Still work to be done there for the Ragin' Cajuns, but you have to like what you saw. Some improvement there, especially on the defensive side of the ball, and they were able to hang with the team that they got clobbered by more than 40 points a year ago. We'll talk more about UL's performance and how they started the season with Damon Mason, the UL Ragin' Cajun football legend. He'll be joining us at 7:32 as he does every Monday morning. That'll be coming up. We also talked about LSU having a record-setting night in its season opener versus Georgia Southern, winning 55-3. Joe Burrow ties the program record for most passing touchdowns in a game with 5. That ties Zach Mettenberger's record, and Joe Burrow was able to do that in the first half alone. Defensively, they were lights out, held Georgia Southern to less than 100 yards of total offense. Dominant performance from start to finish for LSU. We have a new poll question up on this special Labor Day edition of RP3 and Company. You can find it right now on 1037thegame.com. We've also tweeted out a link to it. It's very simple. What was more surprising this weekend? LSU's offense putting up huge numbers in its season opener, UL hanging tough against Mississippi State, or the Saints trading for Miami linebacker Kiko Alonso? Those are your options, your answers. So please go vote at 1037thegame.com and give us your thoughts on what you thought was the most surprising thing of this past weekend. You can also give us a holler on the ARCO Equipment Hotline if you'd like, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. But right now I want to put a bit of that football talk on hold because I want to talk about what happened yesterday in the lovely city of Toronto, because, well, history was made for Justin Verlander.
Cross in time, and that is the ball game. A no-hitter! Justin Verlander, the third of his career. The Astros mob him in front of the mound as the Astros win it 2-0. How about Justin Verlander? He doesn't get older, he gets better. His last no-hitter came in this ballpark 8 years ago.
8 years ago, Justin Verlander had earned his second career no-hitter. That was inside the Rogers Center with the Detroit Tigers. He picked up his third on Sunday. He becomes only the sixth pitcher in Major League Baseball history to have more than two no-hitters in his career. That is a company that includes Nolan Ryan, Sandy Koufax, Cy Young, Bob Feller, and Larry Corcoran. I did not pronounce that last name correctly. Please don't at me. But exclusive company for the Houston Astros ace. He's already won one Cy Young award. It appears he is going to pick up his second of his career, even though Gerrit Cole, his teammate, is going to give him a run for his money. But when you're the ace of a staff for a World Series contender and you get yourself a no-hitter, it's pretty phenomenal. Now, mind you, this game was still in question heading into the ninth inning. This was a scoreless game yesterday. And Verlander stuck with it. Abraham Toro hit his second career home run with two outs, which brought in Alex Bregman. That gave them all they needed as Verlander went back out there for the bottom of the ninth. He got Brandon Drury to ground out. Then he struck out Reese McGuire, which was his 14th strikeout of the day. Not only did he get the no-hitter, he was fanning batters left and right. And then he had Bo Bichette, the 21-year-old shortstop for the Blue Jays, hit a ground ball directly into Toro, who threw it to Diaz, and that helped put Verlander's name in the record books. It's also the second no-hitter for the Astros this year. We remember back on August 3rd in Aaron Sanchez's debut, who used to pitch for the Toronto Blue Jays before being traded at the trade deadline. He pitched six innings as the Astros combined for a no-hitter. Verlander is pitching at an unbelievable level. He's already gonna be a Hall of Famer with what he's been able to do in his career. But he's just having a season for the ages. At his age, to be able to pitch that well, and not only pitch that well, to pitch that dominant. He's out there just killing it. Gets another no-hitter. Now has three in his career. As we said, joins some elusive company there. When you are put on a list with the likes of Nolan Ryan, Sandy Koufax, and Cy Young, you're doing something right. You're absolutely doing something right. And how are you going to stop the Houston Astros? If you're any other team in the American League, or for that matter, the National League. I know everyone raves about the Los Angeles Dodgers. And look, I get it. They are stacked. Absolutely stacked. But so are the Astros. And they got two guys who are competing to win the American League Cy Young Award in their rotation. They have another former Cy Young Award winner who's their number three. And they have another guy who just goes out there and wins like 12, 13 games a year. He's their number four. The questions are on the back end for sure. Bullpen is wildly inconsistent. But when you have this rotation, how do you stop it? Verlander said this afterwards. It means a lot. I'd be lying if I said I didn't know that. I've come so close. Since I've had two, I think I've blown two in the ninth and another couple in the eighth. I was definitely aware of the history aspect of it. Definitely a big hurdle to get over and a very special moment for me. Verlander is now 17-5 on the year. He's likely going to be a 20-game winner and has a no-hitter on his resume for this season. He becomes the first pitcher to throw two no-hitters as a visitor in the same park. His other no-hitter, besides the one that occurred in 2011 when he was still with the Detroit Tigers, occurred in 2007 when the Tigers took on the Milwaukee Brewers. Verlander only allowed one runner, a walk in the first inning, and that was it. That was it. Just an amazing thing. And Verlander threw 120 pitches. 120 pitches. And yet he doesn't look tired. He doesn't look gassed. He looks just as good later in the innings as he does early on. He struck out one of the batters there in the ninth inning. Unbelievable what he's been able to do. And now you have him playing at such a high level. He's now tied for the big league lead, regardless of league, in wins. Eight-time All-Star, former American League MVP and Cy Young Award winner. Remember, he did that in the same season. That's the rare twofer. He tops the majors in strikeouts with 257 and innings pitched 193 and leads the American League with a 2.56 ERA. So he's your leader in wins. He's your leader in strikeouts. He's your leader in innings pitched. And he's your leader in the American League in ERA. Oh, and by the way, he's thrown a no-hitter. And he plays on one of the best teams in baseball. As much as you can make the argument for Gerrit Cole to win the Cy Young, it's going to be Verlander. Cole will get some votes. He'll get a lot of votes, actually. But it's going to be Verlander. Tremendous performance by the Houston Astros ace as he just continues his torrid pace in a historic season for him. This may be his best season. It might even top when he won the American League MVP and Cy Young Award in the same year. That is such a unique accomplishment, but you can make the argument at his age now and doing what he's doing at this age is even more impressive than the MVP Cy Young Award season that he had years ago. Just a reminder, Astros will be back on our airwaves today. Astros have to go to play Milwaukee. That's right. A little two-game set on the road. They'll be playing that today pregame. We'll join pregame in progress at 3 o'clock. First pitch today is at 3:10. So we'll have the Jordy Holtberg Show with Uncle Jordy on this Labor Day. He'll go from 2 to 3 o'clock. He'll turn it over to a quick few minutes of Astros pregame and then Houston Astros Day Baseball. Astros at Brewers on this Labor Day. We'll start at 3:10. No bumper-to-bumper sports today. The good brother Ben Love gets a well-deserved day off. But you can keep it live and local right here on 103.7 The Game as we'll have some day baseball for you. Houston Astros on this Labor Day. Now we got to hit a quick timeout right here on RP3 and Company. But when we return, oh, we're going to get some high school football in. Season starts this week. We have Thursday games. The rest of the games will take place on Friday. We got some team previews for you as we continue going through outside of Lafayette Parish. We're going to hit you up with St. Landry today, starting with the Raiders of Northwest High School. That's coming up next right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. High school football will kick off this Thursday with a few games here in the area, and then the rest of them will take place on Friday. We've been counting down to the start of high school football here on RP3 and Company. A couple weeks back, we did all the Lafayette Parish schools, all 10. Gave you previews, season previews on all 10 of those schools. Last week, we did St. Landry and St. Martin. We're going to keep that going this week as we head into the season opener, and we're going to start things off today and this week with a preview of the Northwest Raiders. That's right, Northwest High School Raiders, led by head coach Chris Edwards, who's in his sixth season at the helm of the program. Look, they're coming off a very good year. 7-3 regular season, and they advanced to the second round of the Class 3A playoffs. They got a lot of talent coming back, and they could be a contender once again in District 5-3A. They've been building something there under Coach Edwards there for a couple years. And this is what he had to say about last year's very successful regular season and postseason.
It was a pretty good run for us last year. We thought we kind of overachieved a little bit with the young guys. We thought we was going to be a 500 team. Snuck out two more victories and got one in the playoffs. So definitely a good year of the team we had, you know.
And as you say, they, on a certain level, probably overachieved. At least that's what it sounds, you know, when you talk to Coach Edwards, that's what it sounds like they're talking about. Because he had to play a lot of young guys last year. But for whatever reason, he and his staff were able to get that young team together. They gelled. And they were able to come together and put together one heck of a season. And look, sometimes that happens. Sometimes you go a year early, so to speak. You have a lot of young players. You think you're going to take a lot of lumps. You think you're going to be, as Coach said right there, a 500 ball club. And in reality, you end up being far better than that. Because you look what they were able to do last year. It started off against Opelousas Catholic, who was a good team last year. 10-point win to start off the year. Boom. Then they go. They take care of Berwick. They beat them. Then they beat West St. Mary. And they lose to Iota and Crowley in back-to-back weeks. That Crowley game was very close. Probably a game they let get away from them. But when they turned around and they got to District 5-3-8, they beat a good Church Point team. They beat Port Barry. They take care of Pine Prairie. Now, Port Barry's not in their district, but Eunice. They lose to Eunice, who goes on to win the state championship. So they had a lot to be happy about. There's a lot to be proud of what they were able to accomplish last year with a young team. Now, that being said, you return the majority of your team from last year, a season where you win 7 regular season games and you advance to the second round of the Class 3A playoffs. So expectations are now going to be higher for the Raiders because of last year's success. There won't be any excuses. There won't be, hey, we have youth or anything like that. You dealt with that last year. You overachieved, which means you've raised the bar. This is what Coach Edwards talked about, dealing with that higher bar for the 2019 season.
Just trying to keep everyone focused. Everybody know what we have, the task at hand. A very tough schedule, very high expectation. Just trying to make sure these guys are mentally ready. The physical part would be easy for them with them playing last year, having a lot of experience. That second-round playoff game cost us with about 26 penalties, so that the youth definitely showed. But all those guys are back up front, so we definitely like to minus away all those penalties and see how far the team could go with a mature mindset, you know?
Mature mindset. You hear that. And if you've ever had to deal with Coach Edwards, like I have over the years, he's all about that, kind of making sure the guys understand that, the maturity. You can't settle. Just because these kids grew up physically on the field and were able to handle the responsibilities of playing at the Class 3A level and winning games and getting to the second round of the playoffs doesn't mean that the work is done. Doesn't mean that he still doesn't have to be diligent, he and his staff, and making sure these guys have the right mindset from week one throughout the entire season. You got to be mature. You got to be strong there with the maturity, with the mental fortitude, so to speak, and you have to be disciplined. And that's something that Coach Edwards is going to be dealing with the entire season, is making sure that his team, his Raiders, are disciplined. Now, they got a ton of guys coming back. So many players got playing time last year when the team was supposed to be young and was supposed to be a 500 kind of season. But he's got one really good dynamic playmaker. He's got a lot of good players on this team, but he's got a dynamic playmaker coming back. Young man, Montez Sam.
Of course, we have Montez Sam back at quarterback. He's been a starter since his sophomore season. He was more of an athlete playing quarterback, but I think he's progressed into a quarterback that's very athletic. We're going to go as far as this guy's arms and legs could take us.
He's now been starting for a few seasons. He is a freakishly good athlete. There's no question. But Sam is going to have to take his game to the next level as a passer. If he can develop just a little bit more than he was last year as a passer and give the Raiders that wrinkle on their offense, they could be even more dangerous than they were last year. They could make more of a noise. And you heard it. His coach, Coach Edwards, sat there and said, we are going to go as far as he can take us with his arm and his legs. He is putting it on the shoulders of his quarterback to be able to lead this team to new heights, to be able to lead this team to a deeper postseason run and a district championship. If Montez Sam is up to that challenge and has worked at getting better throughout the offseason, throughout fall camp, to become more of a complete quarterback, the Raiders could make some noise for sure. But when it comes down to, and Coach Edwards talked about this, for his team, who, by the way, open up the season this Friday at home against the defending 3A champs, the Eunice Bobcats, who are now bumped up to 4A, it's all about preparation. Preparation is key for the Northwest Raiders.
Just preparation. Sometimes I think our guys think they're a little bit better than what they are, and I say that kind of half-heartedly because they are good, and I think that they just don't put out the effort in preparing sometime. You know, I think last year we lost a couple of games that we just didn't prepare for because they was going off the team they beat last year. You know, they got to realize that every game, you know, is a new game, and as good as we are, we got the target on our back. You know, we used to be hunting, now we're the hunted. So just preparing every Friday night, you know, we kind of use the old Nick Saban analogy, don't worry about winning the game, we worry about winning every play. Do your job every play to the best of your ability, and the wins are going to come. So that's kind of how we're coaching them. You know, nobody's bigger than the team, and we could just take care of just preparing every week like it's a big game, not that just preparing for that one or two big games on the schedule in previous years. Now, as a coaching staff, we kind of try to take care of that problem by stepping up and scheduling, you know. So, you know, those guys have to be prepared every week, and we just hope that it carries over through the district and through the playoffs.
Northwest Raiders look to make some noise in 2019. We're going to take a quick time out, but when we come back, we'll get back to college football. Damon Mason, Raging Cajun legend, joins us right here on the KDN Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company, right here on the KDN Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over-the-air 24-hour sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. It's time now for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline to welcome on our first guest. He's taking time out on Labor Day because he's that excited to talk about what he saw from his beloved Raging Cajuns. It's the UL Athletic Hall of Famer, the Raging Cajun legend. His number is retired there at Cajun Field. It's the one and only. He joins us every Monday, Damon Mason. Damon, good morning to you. How was your holiday weekend, brother?
Good morning, RP3. It was good, man. I'm at work, but I'm enjoying it still.
Well, let me ask you, man. I know it's disappointing, the result being a loss, but there's a lot to be happy about. There's a lot of positives that come out of this game, especially if you compare it to last season's game when UL got trucked by Mississippi State. Your initial thoughts from the game and the result of the game between UL and Mississippi State on Saturday inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome?
Correct, RP. Very impressed. Went back and caught the tail end of the game, actually coming from work. But I went back and looked at the stats and looked at some of the highlights. And then knowing again the way I know it at this stage of my life now, understand that it was even closer than it looked on film, based on paper, you know. And as much as we try not to compare, you know, my experiences, Jake DeLone's experiences, Brandon Stokes' experience, guys like us, to, you know, playing against the Floridas and the A&Ms, compared to the Cajuns today, you know, you want to look at the positive and not focus on the negative, you know. Coaches, they're upset, you know, but you still want to find the positive. The players are definitely upset, you know, but they need to focus on the positive. And the positive is that they played extremely hard. They played extremely hard, and at one point in time, they were down by at least 2 touchdowns, and they fought back, you know, to end up losing by 10. A loss is a loss, but you know, it sounds bad sometimes, but you still want to take those positives away from it and say, okay, it's an SEC team, a team that people didn't give us a chance to beat, you know, which sounds very familiar to me, you know. And the guys play hard, you know, but when you look at it, you know, there's a lot to learn from it. There's a lot of things they can correct, you know, but still, in the initial stage of the first game of the year, there are a lot of positives than negatives.
Talking with Damon Mason, UL Athletics Hall of Famer. He joins us courtesy of the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Damon, let's talk a little bit about, they put themselves in a bad spot right off the bat because the offense throws an interception on the first possession, the second possession. Levi Lewis has a fumble, loses the fumble. First two possessions result in turnovers for the Raging Cajuns. Now, Levi was able to overcome that. He bounced back. Mm-hmm. He had a better second half. Your thoughts on what you saw from the young man under center for the Raging Cajuns, his performance as the starting quarterback?
Very athletic, very mobile, and very creative. You know, and as I was watching the tail end again and going back watching the highlights, think about it, you're like, you know what, you really don't want your quarterback to do that. You know, that's what I'm thinking as a coach now, not as a player. But then I also find myself, you know, reminiscing on watching Brian Mitchell's highlights, you know, when I was a Cajun. You know, it's like, wow, he has some of the same capabilities, you know. So, you know, but first game jitters, which is why it's important, you know, to focus and go into the game with the game plan and be calm, cool, and collective. It's a football game. Don't get too high. Don't get too low. It's just like practice, but we practice against another opponent. But I think he is very capable of leading the team. As you said, he came back and settled down and put the kids in a position to do some great things. You know, when I look at the stat right quick, you know, you're talking about total offense. We had 430 yards on offense, so we can definitely put up some points. We can definitely get some yards, you know. But when you settle down and just realize it's a football game against other young men who practice just like we practice, it don't matter who the team is. It don't matter what logo is on it. Just let's go out there and execute the way we execute and practice over and over and over again. And again, it's more mental than physical. So he had to just calm down, be the leader, be calm, cool, and collective. And the results are going to speak for itself once he starts doing that as the leader of the offense.
We're talking with Damon Mason. He's the UL Athletics Hall of Famer, one of the great football legends in program history. He joins us courtesy of the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Dame, you made your money. You made a name for yourself on the defensive side of the ball, my friend. And I know they gave up a lot of yardage, but I know you have to look, there's a lot of positives to take away from that because, look, they didn't give up a 6 total touchdown performance to the quarterback like they did last year. And
correct,
once they gave up some of those early drives, they were able to make adjustments. They forced turnovers themselves. And, you know, they did a nice job with the passing attack and forcing some turnovers. They still have a lot of room to grow, right? They still have a lot of improvement. But your thoughts on what you saw from defensively from the Cajuns, which is still a work in progress, but what were some of your impressions of what they were able to do defensively on Saturday?
I'm glad you said that because the first thing that came to my mind is I didn't see more tackling. You're right. You know, I just got to be brutally honest. You know, it's not bad, but it's encouraging. You know, they got to take the initiative and say, okay, the offense is going to do what they got to do. You know what? We're not going to worry what offense do. We're going to sit down. We're going to prepare for defense. Offense score touchdown, great, fine. Offense turnover, great, fine. I get on the field just that much quicker so I can make something happen. That was our mindset when I played. That was my mindset. So now watch the game. You know, again, we had 430 total yards, but they had 497. Passing, we had 267, but they had 236. Rushing, we had 163. They had 261. So that just shows me if our defense get more stops. Again, I'm always going to play on the defense. Defense has to want to make a difference. You know, interceptions come out of my feather. I knew I was not going to catch interceptions like this. But one thing you do every single play is make tackles. One thing you can have in the course of making a tackle, one thing that I stole from Orlando Thomas, the great Orlando Thomas, and, of course, growing up watching people like Lawrence Taylor, Ronnie Lott. You know, if I can't catch interceptions like that, I always have an opportunity to cause fumble. So I'm always stripping for the ball. You have to find a way to get the ball. I want to see our defense be more aggressive. Get off of blocks. I've seen too many guys not fighting off of blocks violently enough. Well, they were clearly getting hold, but if you're not going to fight, the ref ain't going to call it. You have to literally try to break somebody's arm to get off a block, break their arm trying to take the football. I want to see the defense be more violent, you know. So, and that's the thing that stood out the most to me, protecting the outside, being disciplined in your responsibilities. Too many times we give an outside containment, you know, we had them in contained, and we missed a tackle here, and let the quarterback, of all people, the quarterback get outside of you. It's responsibility. I know it is. So people have to be disciplined and trust their teammate to do their job and fly around causing havoc. That's the name that I made for myself, and I would love to see our Cajuns do the same thing.
Damon, how concerned are you about the rushing defense? They Mississippi State's running back Hill had 27 carries for 197 yards. They could not stop him or even slow him down. Any concerns whatsoever for you moving forward that the run defense is going to be an issue?
Honestly, I would say it's too early to say that. It's the first game. Once again, first game jitters. Also, what would be in the first game that we talked about last week about fatigue. You know, it's an early game. Even though you have scrimmages, you have practice, but we tell people, even when I went to the professional level, anybody can say that, you know, I don't care how much you prepare for the game, the game speed will always be different. So I still don't think those young men are in game six. They might be in shape, but they're not in game shape. You know, even with the physicality of blocking and getting off of blocks on the defensive line, the linebackers. And again, for my stage in my career, I share with young men now, you know, from a secondary standpoint, defensive line might miss tackles because they got to fight consistently, but still, we want them to make the play. But that's why they have the linebackers. If they get past the linebackers, we have the secondary. If they get past the secondary, it's touchdowns. So, again, from a defensive standpoint, my mindset is always to the point where, you know what, I need my secondary, those four guys, cornerbacks, two safeties, to be more physical, to be more active, to get into the run game and contribute. You know, so they do that, and it takes great effort. It takes great effort, preparation, and hustle. And you can't take plays off. You can't be lazy, you know. And I'm not saying that they were doing that. But again, it goes back to being physical and just going the extra mile. You know, I guess you say like I tried to do it, especially the strong safety. The strong safety is not but a linebacker. You know, so responsibility for ball, give great effort and learn from yourself. You know, that should be, to close it out, that should be more about pride. You give up, what you say, 261 rushing and Hill had a monster game. You know, hey, take that, learn from that, and refuse to let that ever happen again.
We're wrapping things up here with UL Athletics Hall of Famer Damon Mason. He joins us courtesy of the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Dame, I have to ask you, you know, they probably take a lot of positives from this game. They probably felt like they let one get by them with the five turnovers that they committed and the fact that they, you know, they gave up. If they would have made some more stops on defense and particularly stopping the running game, they could have won this game. They could have finally had that first win against an SEC opponent. But – how long do you dwell on that as a player? I mean, because they got to gear up. They got the home opener this Saturday, 6:30 kick. Liberty comes to town. Obviously, it's a different competition. You should be able to go toe-to-toe with Liberty and come out with the win. But what's your mindset as a player? What are you doing as one of the leaders in that locker room, Dame, today?
Oh, today, honestly, because everything you say was hit a nail on the head. You know, today might be the toughest day because you have to watch film. You know, once you get past through watching that film, because you always, you know, I always dread going in watching the film when you know you didn't play your best or you gave away a game. Once you get past that film, and of course the constructive criticism you're going to get from your coach and you need to get from your coach, once you get past that, now, you know, it's a big burden off your chest. You know, it's a relief. You can breathe, and now you can go out there and execute and prepare for the next game, which is what we had to do when we lost to Florida, had a week off to prepare for Texas A&M. You know, so now hopefully they will understand that everything that you have been doing, you got to continue to do that times 10. Spend more time in film. Spend more time messing up in practice so you can minimize your mistakes in the game. Spend more time asking questions. You know, everything you have been doing, you got to be willing to do that much more. You know, and again, in Liberty lost 24-0 to Syracuse, so they just as hungry. But I definitely think they can go toe-to-toe and beat Liberty pretty soundly. But again, you have to go out there with the mindset and prepare mentally as well as physically and every day in practice. You know, take it one play at a time, one day at a time, and just go in the game and execute. Whatever game plan the coaches come up with, execute that. And that's the bottom line.
Damon, one more question here for Damon Mason, the UL Athletics Hall of Famer. He joins us courtesy of the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Damon, you kind of hinted at it there, so you expect UL to get the first win of the 2019 season here at home at Cajun Field on Saturday, and you think it's going to happen in convincing fashion?
Definitely. You know, and I'm not taking nothing away from Liberty, but I'm always going to pull for my Cajuns. I don't care who they play. I'm always going to pick them to win because I understand what it means to have everybody pull against you. You know, people pull against us way back in 96, and I didn't care. I was going to prove them wrong. So, but I went back and I watched Liberty highlights. I look at their stats. You know, they struggled against Syracuse. You know, we didn't struggle against Mississippi State. You know, we made self-sustaining errors. You know, penalties here and there. But Liberty tried to pass. You know, they got a decent running game, but still, they put up no points. I think the Cajuns can go out there and put up and beat them convincingly, but they have to not take them lightly. They have to prepare and learn from their mistakes and execute the game plan. Coaches have a great game plan. They were in position to make plays on offense and defense, but they just didn't make the plays. And it happens. It happens. But if you prepare more mentally as well as physically and do what the coaches tell you to do to the best of your God-given ability. Now, it's not going to always happen the way they say it's going to happen, but when you're in position to make a play, it's as simple as that. You have to make the play. You have to make a tackle, you have to make the tackle. You know, you can't arm tackle. You can't, you know, get lazy when somebody's blocking you and expect your teammate to make the play. These are things that I saw, you know, these are things you see on every level. So, and as you say, I take that very personally. You know, tackling happens every play, every play. If you don't take pride in tackling, you won't tackle. If you don't take pride in hustling, you will get beat. You know, offensive line, I saw them, I didn't say it, but I saw offensive line staying up sometime, but that's what I knew first game. First game, not in the best of shape. When the offensive line get in better shape and they start driving those blockers, man, the Cajuns, you know, this is the second year, and they're very well polished. Levi Lewis, just calm down, settle down, listen to Coach Napier, go in there, know that he's the coach on the field, he's the general on the field, be confident. When they look in his eyes the way we did with Jake DeLone, they should know it. Okay, man, we got this here. No matter what happens, calm, cool, collective. That's good. The Gambia's state should prove to them what they are capable of doing when they play a complete game for 60 minutes.
Damon, appreciate it as always. Thank you for taking time for us on this Labor Day, brother. Enjoy the rest of your day. I know you got to do a little work, but, man, enjoy some time off today, man, and we'll talk to you next week, my friend.
All right, thanks, guys. You guys take care.
That's UL Athletics Hall of Famer, football legend Damon Mason joining us there, courtesy of the ARCO Equipment Hotline, giving his thoughts on the UL Raging Cajuns, their performance against Mississippi State. You heard it. He said there was a lot to be happy about, but there was also things that he did not like. Tackling. He kept bringing that up. It's a guy who was known for tackling as a defensive back. Dame's going to be honest. He's going to be honest. They got to be better on that side of the ball, and they got to be better. He even mentioned about the offensive line looking like they were standing up a little bit. So he said they still got work to be done. He feels that they're going to bounce back with a big win this week, but he wants to see more from the defense. And I'm pretty sure some Raging Cajun fans out there would agree with the legend, Damon Mason. We got to take a quick timeout, but when we return here on RP3 and Company, Saints make their cuts, get down to a 53-man roster on Saturday. Sunday, they're like, hold on, let's trade for someone. We'll talk about it right here on the Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. It's RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Look, the Saints, cut down day was Saturday. We talked about a lot about it on last week's show, who they're getting cut. Some guys did not make the roster, Cyril Grayson Jr. Emmanuel Butler did not. Emmanuel Butler ended up being signed to the practice squad. Cyril Grayson Jr., the former LSU track star, was not. Okay. So some interesting moves there, but nothing that was really earth-shattering, right, what they did. Dan Arnold was placed on the practice squad. They're only carrying two tight ends as of right now. Dan Arnold, Annalise Mack, the seventh-round draft pick out of Notre Dame, was also put onto the practice squad as well. But the big kind of shocker came on Sunday. Yesterday, they traded for linebacker Kiko Alonso. 29-year-old Alonso played the last three seasons for the Miami Dolphins. In those three seasons, he recorded 355 tackles, 6 forced fumbles, 11 pass deflections, 5 interceptions, and a sack. He also started 46 of 48 games. He was a second-round draft pick out of Buffalo in 2013. He was named the Defensive Rookie of the Year by Pro Football Weekly that season. He did have an ACL tear in 2014, but he's a healthy starter, and the Saints just simply traded a backup for him, straight up. So a tremendous pickup for the Saints right there before the start of the season. We'll talk more about the Saints and Kiko Alonso with Barry Hurstis at 8:32. But coming up next, Jeff Palermo, Louisiana Radio Network, joins us right here on the Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III talks sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Former LSU National Championship coach Les Miles.
So when I took the field, I was ecstatic that that crowd was just happy as they could be with these Tigers.
CFL Most Outstanding Player and Grey Cup Champion Kerry Joseph.
You know, growing up as a kid and new out there, it was just about playing sport. You never knew where it was going to take you. You have a desire, you have a dream, you have a passion for it. Just to be where I am today, it's something that I would have never thought.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning. Welcome back to this special Labor Day edition of RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III, and you're listening to Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. I want to thank you for making us part of your morning, your holiday morning. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. And we're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over the air, 24-hour sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber, 133 and 1133 in high definition. We talked earlier on today's show about just the utter dominance and execution by the LSU Tigers against Georgia Southern, 55-3. Absolute beatdown, held the Eagles to less than 100 yards of offense. Defensively, lights out, forced turnovers, shut down their offensive run game. Offensively, Joe Burrow, historic night, only really played a half. And it seemingly everyone under the moon touched the ball in this new spread open offense. It looks like one of the best in the country. We're going to talk all about that and his impressions from what he saw inside Tiger Stadium on Saturday night. As we head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our next guest, he's part of the Louisiana Radio Network. He's also co-host of Tiger Rag Radio, which you can listen to every Tuesday night right here on 103.7 The Game. It's our good friend, the one and only Jeff Palermo. Jeff, how you doing this morning, brother?
I'm doing well, Raymond. How about yourself?
Doing well. I checked the box score, And I was ready to see your name in there because of how many people actually touched the football on offense on Saturday night, Jeff. They really did spread the ball out, brother. How impressed were you by that?
I think one of my favorite stats from the game is, last year they completed the passes to 14 different receivers. They matched that in just one game. They did Saturday. They completed passes to 14 different players. That was impressive on how they got everybody involved. It's going to be you get the sense that it's going to be very difficult to key in on one guy. You had no idea where the ball was going. Joe Burrow seemed like he knew exactly where he wanted to throw the football before the snap, and it was just a flawless effort. I said it on Tiger Rag Radio last Tuesday. I said, there's probably going to be moments in this game where you get a little frustrated or a little angst. Maybe because it's not going to go as well as they've been hyping it up to go. But man, it was exactly what these guys, the coaching staff, and the players have been talking about here for weeks, if not months, of what this offense will look like. And it was refreshing to actually hear about changes that are going to be made to the offense and actually see them in person be exactly what they've been telling you here for months. So kudos to them. Obviously, the competition gets a huge step up coming up this Saturday. But for what you saw against Georgia Southern, it looks like it's going to be a fun season offensively.
We're talking with Jeff Palermo of the Louisiana Radio Network. He's also co-host of Tiger Rag Radio. He joins us courtesy of the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jeff, Joe Burrow was magnificent, his best game yet as a Tiger, performance-wise, a historic night. Ties Zach Mettenberger's record for 5 touchdown passes in a game. Just your takeaways of how well Joe Burrow looks in this offense with Steve Ensminger calling plays and Joe Brady there as the passing game coordinator.
Well, he looks really comfortable. I mean, he just seems like he's really in sync. They took a couple shots downfield, not many. They really didn't have to, but the short passing game, get rid of the ball quickly. There really was no pressure on them. Georgia Southern never really brought anything to. You can kind of tell they really didn't know what to expect. I don't think they thought it was going to be that fast of up-tempo. I think one of the things that was most pleasing, other than, they were completing passes at a high percentage, but just that there never looked to be any kind of a sense of confusion. Even when they, can't remember, maybe it was when they completed a pass over the middle and they got it down to 3rd and 1 and they quickly got up to the line of scrimmage and they ran the quarterback sneak with Burrow to get the first down. I mean, just a thing of beauty, just stuff that you want to see out of an offense. You want to see them execute the way they did. And it went out there. And I mean, again, I think it was about as perfect of a performance that you can expect. Even when they were shuffling personnel in and out of the ball game, never a look of confusion. Everybody seemed to be on the same page. Now let's see when they take it on the road, when the crowd noise is loud, the defense is better, the athletes are better. And what happens when you get a little pressure on Joe Burrow? And Ed Orgeron said that after the game. He says he knows that they were going to come into this game, be able to pass and catch, and they're going to complete passes and move the chains. I think a question mark still is, can they protect him long enough where he could execute this offense? Maybe not as a high rate as what you saw against Georgia Southern, but somewhere close to that, or at least have this offense continue to be efficient. That's the big question. You still don't know really what you got there on that offensive line, because you didn't really face much of a test this past Saturday.
We're talking with Jeff Palermo of the Louisiana Radio Network. He's also co-host of Tiger Rag Radio. He joins us courtesy of the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jeff, I want to give you two guys who did a very good job at catching the football on Saturday. One's Terrence Marshall. 4 catches, 3 of them were for touchdowns. He became the go-to red zone target there. And Thaddeus Moss, 2 catches for 61 yards, including that terrific 44-yard completion. Your thoughts on what you saw out of both Moss and Marshall?
Man, Thaddeus Moss is a big dude. he is a big dude out there, man. And then Terrace Marshall, we just never really saw the Terrace. You know, we never really saw Terrace Marshall at 100%. I mean, he had a very significant injury in his senior season of his high school career, and just was not ready last season. Really, gave it his go. I think what you're looking at is the best receiving core that you've had since Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham. There's no doubt about it. I mean, you got with Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson, and I think they're going to continue to get more guys involved here as the season goes along. And, you know, I think you asked me a couple of weeks ago about whether how much of an impact a tight end will have. And, you know, they weren't afraid to throw the ball to Thaddeus Moss. And why not? I mean, that guy is a huge target. He's a big guy. He's going to see passes go his way. I think you're going to see Stephon Sullivan because of his height and how big he is. I think passes are going to go his way. They got multiple guys to throw the football to. I mean, they're just so deep at wide receiver. But really, throughout, the three main guys are going to be Chase, Jefferson, and Marshall. And I don't know which one of these guys. I mean, again, I think Justin Jefferson is just because of the relationship him and Joe Burrow built last year. I think that will be one guy he'll always look to if Burrow's in trouble. But I don't think you can necessarily just zone in on one of these guys. I all of them are really talented, and all of them can hurt you in a different way. So it's going to stretch opposing defenses thin. And you always got to think about when you watch these games, you got to look ahead to the game against Alabama. And, you know, for so many years, it was just so easy to zone in on particular skill position players for LSU because they had a great running back and really just maybe one really good wide receiver. This approach that they have and the talent level that they have out there is going to stretch you thin that you can't just sit there and zone in on one of these guys. And I think with the running backs they have, because they are spreading you out and you've got different wide receivers, this is going to make life a lot easier for whoever you're going to be giving the ball to, Clyde Edwards-Helaire or John Emery, Tyrion Davis-Price, or Leonard Fournette. You know, the shuffling of those guys in throughout the game, Chris Kirk, I mean, all of them got a chance to play. And it seems to me that Clyde Edwards-Helaire, this is a really good fit for him. He's a small guy, but he's quick. And he can run in between the tackles, and you saw a little bit of that. So again, it was Georgia Southern, so I remember BYU, they just really outclassed BYU a couple seasons ago, and that turned out to be a really bad BYU team, and then LSU lost to Troy that season. So I don't know how good that Georgia Southern team was. I don't think they looked like a 10-win team, in my opinion, or maybe LSU was just that good, but I don't think that was a 10-win team we saw this past Saturday. So I think we'll have a clearer idea of how really all this works and how this is all coming together after they play the Longhorns.
Jeff, what do we make of Michael Divinity Jr. not playing?
Well, I just, you know, there were, you knew of rumors of suspensions, and I guess that's, he was one of them. So not exactly sure what happened. Why, you know, I still think he's considered a leader on this team. You know, he was brought out in front of the media quite a few times during the preseason. Looks like he made a mistake. But Damone Clark filled in nicely.
Yeah, you know, you can say that.
So, and Coach O has been singing his praises all preseason long. So I think you'll see Divinity out there. I think you'll see Sadiq Charles out there this weekend. This coming Saturday, a game against Saturday. I don't believe these suspensions are, you know, multi-game, but, you know, LSU has them every year. I think every team has them every year.
True.
Stuff happens. from the last time you play a game from January to September, and these things occur. So I would think you'll see divinity against the Longhorns this Saturday.
Jeff, thanks for coming on, brother. Keep up the great work, including what you guys are doing on Tiger Rag Radio. And we'll talk to you next week, my friend.
Sounds good, man. Thank you.
That's Jeff Palermo of the Louisiana Radio Network, also co-host of Tiger Rag Radio, which you can listen to every Tuesday night right here on 103.7 The Game. We're going to take a quick timeout, but when we return, we're going to give you our second high school season preview. Keep it right in St. Landry Parish as we head over to Port Barry. That's coming up next, right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III, and this is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We appreciate you making us part of your holiday. It's Labor Day. I hope you're enjoying the day off from work, if you are one of the few that are enjoying some little R&R, so to speak, with this extended holiday weekend. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over-the-air 24-hour sports coverage. And you can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Just wrapped up a good conversation with our friend Jeff Palermo from the Louisiana Radio Network. He helped break down LSU's convincing 55-3 win. Coming up at 8:32, our boy Barry. Barry Hurstis from the Saints News Network and Big Easy Magazine. He's going to give us his thoughts on the final 53-man roster cuts, the guys that were signed to the practice squad, who made it, who didn't, as well as the Kiko Alonso trade. Barry's going to break all of that down for us coming up at 8:32. But before then, we're going to do a little bit more high school action. High school football season kicks off this Thursday with real games, Friday as well, the traditional lineup. We talked about Northwest High School earlier on today's show. Now we're going to stay in St. Landry Parish to talk about the Port Barry Devils. Craig Stevens is entering his 26th season at the school. Let that wrap around you. Let that thought process for a minute. Now, it's only going to be his third year as the head football coach, but he's been there as a longtime assistant beforehand. The Devils have not made the postseason since 2015 was their last trip. They were 2-8 last year. Lots of struggles going on. They're actually dropping down from 3A down to 2A. So they were in that 5-3A district with Northwest, but now they're dropping down classification, and they'll be playing in 6-2A. And even though it was a tough season, 2-8 regular season, did not make the postseason on the outside looking in again. Coach Stevens, though, said there were still positives to take away from last year for the Devils.
Positive thing is the year before we didn't win any games. So, you know, I know winning two doesn't sound like much progress, but we were so much more competitive in games last year than we were the previous year. You know, and just, you know, playing in that district was so tough, you know, night in, night out. You were playing against a quarterfinal or better team in our district, you know. So, like I said, the record wasn't what we wanted it to be, but we did make progress from year one to last year.
So, for him, they took a little, you know, they took some steps. And at first glance, you're going to look at that and you go, hey, you know what, only two wins, that's not that impressive. But if you didn't win a game the year before and you win a couple games and you're far more competitive than you are before, you're taking steps to get better. Look, becoming a better football team does not happen overnight. There's not a miracle play that you can type up or put up or draw up on the whiteboard that's going to turn your program around from being a winless team and a two-win team to a 10-win team. Doesn't happen. Just does not happen. It takes time. It takes multiple players, dozens upon dozens of guys to buy into your system, to buy into your coaching philosophy, and to understand it and execute the game plan. It takes years for this to happen. This football, high school football, is the type of sport that you need time to turn things around. And look, Port Barry has some excellent tradition. Now, most of that will happen in the 90s and early 2000s. But they do have tradition. And Coach is trying to turn things around, and he's trying to bring that back. Now, dropping down to 2A, though, may be part of that solution. Coach said as much.
Very, very glad we're dropping down to 2A. Now, we're gonna be in a tough district, as you know. I mean, with Notre Dame, Lafayette Christian, Welsh, you know, all teams that's been in the dome. You know, last year they were all in the dome, them three. You know, you had Lake Arthur in there. So, I mean, it's definitely not gonna be any easier than the district we're coming from. But hopefully we can get in the playoffs. You know, you don't have to worry about the Lafayette Christians, the Notre Dames. You know, it's definitely a something that needed to be done. Our numbers in football are about 2A numbers, so very glad to be back down in 2A.
And he is going to be down in 6-2A, that district. This is how Port Barry has to end the season. At Lake Arthur, then at home against Lafayette Christian, a defending state champ, Welsh, and then at Welsh, and then at home versus Notre Dame. Whoa, that is a gauntlet to end the season. Their non-district slate, which starts this Friday, when they go on the road and play at Terror there in the Baton Rouge area. Then it's at Beauchamp, at home versus Opelousas Catholic, at home versus Mamou, and then at home versus Pine Prairie, and then away on the road against Avoyelles. So the schedule is going to be a little daunting there for Port Barry, but Coach Stevens is happy that they're back playing at a 2A level. This is what he had to say about his team's offense and what you can expect to see from the Devils in 2019.
We expect big things from Karin this year. Mature kid, you know, the sky's the limit for him, to be honest with you. He's very talented. Other guys, we basically got our whole offense back from last year. We have Damone Thomas, which will be our fullback in the wing T. Damone played a lot as a sophomore last year. We have Andre Trimble, which will be one of our wingbacks. Andre's a sophomore, very explosive, probably the fastest guy on our team. And we have Parker Spar, another guy that's going to be a two-way player for us. Parker's a hard-nosed kid. He's about 195. He's a junior. We're expecting big things from him. He was actually our leading tackler on the other side of the ball at middle linebacker. And we also have Terrell Roberts, which is a, you know, pretty big receiver for us. He's about 6'2". Terrell's been starting since he's a freshman. He's a junior now. I mean, we have playmakers on the offensive side. It's going to be how good we can be up front is going to be the key to our offense.
How good they can be up front. If the offensive line can be better, you could see Port Barry possibly make a jump up to maybe a 4-win, 5-win team, possibly even be a playoff team. So some optimism there for the Devils of Port Barry High School. Guys, in Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. Sometimes multiple lines are in one area. So if you are a contractor that you've hired is digging a hole to put in a new fence, a pool, or for another reason, look, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. What happens then? Maybe you only knock the power out for your entire neighborhood. But sometimes there's an explosion with injuries and even death. It happens every single year. And there's a very simple way to avoid it. Before you dig, just call 811. That's all you got to do. Call 811 2 days before you dig. Tell the operator your address, and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you or your contractor can avoid them. Simple, right? It's free of charge, and it's the law. Louisiana One Call operates 811 as a public service, and to promote public safety, Louisiana One Call and 103.7 The Game remind you, call 811 and know what's below before you dig. We got to take a timeout here. When we come back, our boy Barry Hurstis joins us right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Good morning. Welcome back to RP3 and Company, special Labor Day edition of RP3 and Company. Appreciate you making us part of your morning on this special holiday extended weekend. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over-the-air, 24-hour sports coverage. You can also find us on 133 and 1133 in high definition on LUS Fiber. We spent a lot of today's programming, as expected, talking about college football. Raging Cajuns had themselves a heck of a game, came up short, taking down Mississippi State, but a lot to be proud of, nothing to hang their head about. We also talked about how LSU was nearly perfect against Georgia Southern in their opener, winning 55-3. But you know what? The Hoodats, the Saints, are gearing up for the season. They'll open up their season a week from tonight. They're the game one of the two-game Monday night football doubleheader. This past Saturday was cut-down day. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the surprise additions to the practice squad, and we'll talk about the Kiko Alonso trade for the New Orleans Saints that occurred yesterday with our next guest. He joins us every Monday. He covers the Saints for the Saints News Network and Big Easy Magazine. It's our boy, Barry, Barry Hirsis. Barry, how you doing this morning, brother?
Doing fine, RP3, and how about yourself, my friend? I hope you've enjoyed your holiday weekend thus far.
I have, my friend. We had college football to witness. I got to go down and see the Raging Cajuns inside the Superdome, but I stuck around long enough, Barry, to see them already putting up all the Saints stuff around the stands. They're getting ready. They're ready for that Monday night opener. We'll get to that, and we'll talk more about that next week as well, Barry, but I want to go back to Saturday. They started doing their cuts on Friday. Cyril Grayson Jr. and some others were cut. And then they made all their final roster cuts on Saturday to get down to 53 men. Any surprises to you? What stood out to you about the final roster cuts on Friday and Saturday?
Oh, well, clearly Emmanuel Butler. I thought that was quite a shock. As you recall, I had told you I thought he made the final roster. So to see him get cut was a little bit disheartening. It got me choked up, as a matter of fact. But Saints fans were understandably upset because, I mean, there's been a lot of hype around this guy. You know, I believe it was Deuce McAllister that, or somebody to that caliber, person who referred to him as the next Marcus Colston. So, I mean, that's some pretty tall comparison there. So, that one kind of surprised me. I was kind of hoping they would keep the Ozigbo kid. And as you saw, Jacksonville pounced on him, as I expected. I'm surprised nobody took a little Jordan Humphrey. And now, granted, all these guys that got put on the practice squad, as you know, are all eligible to be poached by other teams. But, we'll see how that turns out. But definitely, without question, I thought the Emmanuel Butler move specifically was the one that stood out.
We're talking with Barry Hirsis of the Saints News Network and Big Easy Magazine. He joins us courtesy of the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Barry, let's talk about that. They decided to keep six wide receivers. It was Michael Thomas, Ted Ginn Jr., Tre'Quan Smith, Keith Kirkwood. They also decided to keep Deontay Harris. You talked about Emmanuel Butler not being on the roster. Who do you think took his spot?
It was seemingly would be Austin Carr. Now, that you would put Austin Carr in the slot, because we assume, obviously, that Austin Carr will be your slot receiver. To put a guy like, and look, this is no knock on Austin Carr. God bless him. Hey, man, he worked his tail off all summer. And granted, he earned it. He earned the spot. That said, if I'm choosing between, and this is just my personal observation, if I'm choosing putting a 6'4 guy in the slot as opposed to the 5'11 guy, I'm putting a 6'4 guy in the slot, especially when it's been compared to Marcus Colston. Again, no knock on Austin Carr. God bless him, man. He worked his tail off and he earned the spot. And the coaching staff, they like Austin Carr. He's a hard worker. He runs great routes. He pretty much catches everything thrown his way. As you know, he came over originally from the Patriots organization. So, again, I got no issue with Austin Carr making it. But to me personally, that was the one, because I always thought that Kirkwood was going to make it. I always felt like there was something about Kirkwood that stood out to them last year that even in camp this year, you could see they were still favoring him a little bit. When he'd be in with the ones with the first team, even Drew would still work for him. So there's that comfort level there with Kirkwood. You know, there's not really that comfort level with Butler because he's an undrafted rookie. He's still figuring the kid out, you know, what he can do good, what he can't do. And I just think it came down to the fact that they're a little more familiar with Carr, and they just felt a little more comfortable with it, and decided to take that chance and running through the waiver process. They were very fortunate, because believe me when I tell you, there's film out there now on this guy. So if somebody, a team that needs a wide receiver, it wouldn't shock me at all if they went to the Saints practice squad and tried to poach not only Butler, but a little Jordan Humphrey, another guy who I thought, even though he wasn't, you know, he didn't blow people away per se, is a guy that has NFL caliber talent, and would not shock me to see some other team try to come take him off that practice squad.
We're talking with Barry Herstis of the Saints News Network and Big Easy Magazine. He joins us courtesy of the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Barry, I have to ask, Cyril Grayson Jr., they raved about him during camp. They loved him, and yet when it came down to it, not only did he not make the 53-man roster, they did not put him on the practice squad. Your thoughts?
Another shock, because if you go through that practice squad 1 through 10, there's a couple of guys on there I wouldn't be putting over Cyril Grayson Jr. Not with that speed. Now, and look, again, and you and I have discussed Grayson at length, I thought that he was coming along nicely. I thought that he was starting to develop some route running. I thought in that, what was that? I believe the Jets game where you really saw him come into his own in that second half. Taysom Hill found him on that beautiful play down the sideline. And that one play in that Jets game made me think to myself, hey, this kid's got a legitimate shot at pulling this off. So the fact that not only did he not make, you know, that he didn't make the final roster wasn't such a great shock, but that you didn't bother putting him on your practice squad. And I get it, because if you go look at the practice squad 1 through 10, it's geared heavily towards offense. So I get the fact that they didn't want to put a fourth guy, because I believe you got the what's his name?
Taquan.
Call his name, Mizell. Yeah. So that you put Grayson on there, then you got essentially four wide receivers out of your 10 practice squad guy. So I get it in that sense, but again, man, when you got that type of talent, you know Mizell versus Grayson, you know, I'm leaning Grayson. But again, I don't want to knock other players, because I always get into this fine thing about where I criticize a guy and people take it personal. So it's never personal. It's an evaluation. It's just calling it as you see it. But I personally, quite shocked that Cyril didn't make it. And hey, look, there's, again, 31 other NFL teams. They know Grayson's out there. Would not shock me to see somebody claim him here within the next 24 to 48 hours.
I'm talking with Barry Herstis of the Saints News Network and Big Easy Magazine. He joins us courtesy of the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Let's talk about the tight end position. A bit of a stunner to me is the fact that they're opting to go with only two guys on the 53-man roster. That's, of course, Jared Cook, the starter, and Josh Hill. And they were able to keep Dan Arnold and Alize Mack, your boy from Notre Dame, Barry. They put him on the practice squad. Your thoughts on what they did with tight end?
Again, a little bit of a shock. I thought for sure they would keep a third guy. And you see, as you recall, I had picked AJ Derby. Shows you what I know. but and look, man, it's so hard to get inside the coach's head, because you know, watching it in practice every day, and you think to yourself, well, maybe they're favoring this guy or they're leaning towards this guy, and then roster cuts come down, and you're like, huh? What were they looking at? So, again, I get it, the evaluation, because what coaches put into the evaluation process is not what sports writers or fans put into the evaluation process. It goes a lot deeper, and I get it. So, but that said, I just thought that was a shock to only go with two tight ends. As you saw, I got the Alize Mack prediction correct in my article from last week. I felt that he kind of regressed at the end of camp. That's obviously the way they felt. I think, to be completely honest with you, I think they cut Mac on purpose, almost like to teach him a lesson. And I've told you this, and you've seen it in my articles, where Sean Payton pointedly in practice several times that I saw, at least three times that I can remember, pulling the Alize Mac off to the side and chewing him up and down. So, and not to be mean, not to be a jerk, but just because he's trying to teach him, you know, he's trying to teach him fundamentals. He's trying to teach him. And I think this is my perception, because I'm not going to ask Sean Payton and get my butt chewed out, but I just think Mac had a lot of difficulty picking up the, picking up blocking, blitz packages and that type of stuff. Route running, I think a lot of it was route running the proper route, learning the offense, learning the ins and outs of the playbook. I think he really struggled with that. And I almost think, and then with the fight, when he got into the big fight with Trey Hendrickson near the end of camp, I think that he got to him. Hey, man, it's a kid from up north. I think that he got to him a little bit, that New Orleans humility. And maybe it soured his attitude a little bit. And I just think there was something about that rugby coaches are all around. They said, look, we love this kid. We obviously think he's a steal, you know, to get him in the seventh round. He's immensely talented. But he needs a little comeuppance, maybe. And I think he got that. As you saw how humble he was yesterday or the day before yesterday on Twitter, after he got, once he realized he was going to go to the practice squad, I think a little humility set in. And I think you're going to see that kid work his tail off. Hopefully nobody claims him. And would not surprise me if they called him up and do with him as I predicted they would months ago, which is make him the heir apparent eventually down the line, you know, 3-4 years from now when the Garrett Cook era is over. So we'll see how that works out. Dan Arnold, stunning, because of the, you know, look, history is what it is. It is what it is. We saw what happened with Arnold in the NFC Championship game. Saints fans still have not forgiven him. And he struggled a little bit in that preseason opener against the Vikings. He caught a little flack for that. I personally thought that would be enough to get him released and, you know, pack his bags and look for other opportunities elsewhere. But there's that familiarity. He knows the scheme. There's something, you know, that obviously the coaches try to convert him from a wide receiver to tight end, so they like him. And that's always the thing to remember about the Saints coaching staff. There are certain guys that they like or that they have a long-term goal for. And even though we might not see it, they see it, and therefore they put it into action.
Wrapping things up here with Barry Herstis of the Saints News Network, as well as Big Easy Magazine. He joins us courtesy of the ARCO Equipment Hotline. All right, Barry, so you get done, you do all that hard work, doing your stories on the 53-man roster, then having to craft your stories about the practice squad, and then the Saints go out and get themselves a former Defensive Rookie of the Year, 29-year-old Kiko Alonso from the Dolphins, and they gave up essentially nothing, a backup linebacker to get a starter in the National Football League. Your thoughts about that stunning trade yesterday for the Saints and the Dolphins?
I love it. Look, first, let's get this out here, okay? I see a lot of, you know, it's typical nature for Saints fans. They overreact to things sometimes. And guys get a reputation, you know, a guy like Dez Bryant being a perfect example. Guys get a reputation league-wide. We all know what happened with Kiko Alonso when he went to Oregon. Okay, he got the DUI. He played for Chip Kelly. He allegedly broke into the woman's house or apartment. You know, claimed he was drunk and thought he was at his home place. Got probation for that. Then came back, won the Rose Bowl MVP. Then got into the NFL. Blew out his ACL not once but twice with two different teams. With Buffalo, who drafted him originally in 2013, and then the Eagles, who he basically played one game for before they shipped him off to Miami. So he got that. He was labeled, you know, injury prone or damaged goods type of guy. But to his credit, ever since he got to Miami, wound up starting 46 out of 48 games. And you can see, and I mentioned this in my article yesterday, not only do you see the progression of his skill set and his game evolving into one of the better linebackers, quite honestly, in the league, but you also saw him mature as a man. And I think that the people always discount stuff like that. You know, and believe me, as a guy who used to be young myself and stupid when I was in my mid-20s, God knows, when you as you get older and you get that sense of maturity, your whole perspective on life changes. And I think for Kiko, his life changed. He got serious about football. He got serious about repairing his reputation. And he put it into practice by being the best NFL guy. It didn't matter that he was with the Dolphins. He just put it all into becoming the best player that he possibly could. And look, don't discount this guy. He's outstanding. You know, he could play sideline to sideline. And most importantly, and this is what I titled the article, as you saw when I sent you the link last night, versatility. He can play the Sam or the strong side. He can play the Will or the weak side, and he can even play middle or the Mike, which is where DeMario Davis will probably remain. I'm assuming that he's going to play the Will or the weak side, and the reason for that is because and the Saints are so tight-lipped with injuries, and I guess we'll find out maybe today or sometime this week during the week's preparation, perhaps they'll reveal exactly what's going on with Alex Anzalone. And or possibly both Anzalone and Craig Robinson, because to my knowledge, both guys are hurt, which prompted this trade in the first place. But that said, when you're adding a Chico Alonso to your roster that already has a DeMario Davis, that already has a, when healthy, a talented Anzalone, when healthy, a very versatile and underrated Craig Robinson, and, you know, A.J. Klein, probably considered a weak link by most Saints fans, but, you know, he's a versatile guy, can play multiple positions as well. This linebacking core is very deep and talented, and you adding a Chico Alonso to it, not only does it make it better talent-wise, but quite obviously, it gives you much better depth. So now you know.
Gotta let you go, Barry. Appreciate the insight, though, brother. Enjoy your rest of your holiday and the rest of the week, and we'll talk to you next time. We got to take our final time out of today's special Labor Day edition of the show. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. What a terrific Labor Day edition of RP3 and Company. I want to take a moment to thank all of our guests for taking time out of their holiday to spend it with us and you, the listener. Damon Mason, Raging Cajun legend, breaking down the Cajuns' performance. Jeff Palermo from Louisiana Radio Network and Barry Hurstis from Big Easy Magazine and Saints News Network. Go vote on our poll question at 1037thegame.com. Jordy Holberg will be on the air today from 2 to 3. He'll lead you into Houston Astros Day Baseball. Keep it live and local right here on 1037 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.